Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. Huge thanks to our sponsors. They make this show happen. EMP Shield is building the best shielding device. It'll protect your home, car, motorhome if you've got one, boat, generator. It'll protect it all against solar flares, lightning strikes, and even EMPs, as the name implies. It's many times more efficient than a single-use military design. It can handle up to 40 EMP strikes. And it's fitted to a household circuit breaker with just four wires. You can install it like a Type 2 surge protector. There's installation videos on their website. You can find them online if you want to do it yourself or have an electrician come out and knock it out in 10 minutes. It's all available. Do this. Go to empshield.com. Read up about it. See if you find something you like. If you do, they've got bundle packages. You can get a couple of them for cheaper. Use the promo code MACRO. That'll definitely save you some money on your way out. And also thanks to Tim James and the crew over at Chemical Free Body. They've got me on the Detox Bundle 90-day program. I started 90 days before in Acapulco so that I could get leaned out and ready to rock in time for that conference. And I'll tell you what, I've done it before. I had staggering results. It was scary how much weight I lost. And I don't have a lot of weight to lose. And I wasn't trying to lose weight. It just kind of accidentally happened. So if you are interested, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com. You can find a detox bundle. And that's what I'm talking about. Or you can just grab a couple green 85s, use that, mix that into your morning routine. It's really easy. It takes less than 5 minutes. You can pick up the new Pat Miletich Super Soldier formula that is available there as well. On your way out, promo code MACRO to save some money. Speaking of Acapulco, are you going to be there? I'll see you in Mexico. February 11th through the 16th, Acapulco, Mexico, and Acapulco, the 10th annual Anarchy Festival. It's all happening. There's a lot going on there. I've been a speaker there on three different occasions, and I am grateful and humbled and excited to be the host and MC of the event this year. So come check it out. Come spend. We're watching the Super Bowl down there, and then we're getting into business on the following Monday. So come check it out. Anarchapulco.com, promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. Well, my guest needs no introduction, but he's going to get one anyway. He is the host of the wildly popular Tinfoil Hat podcast. He is the host of Zero, which takes it down a little bit, gets a little spiritual. He's the co-host of Conspiracy Social Club with Brian Callen. He's the co-host of Broken Simulation with Johnny Woodard. He's one of my co-hosts on the Union of the Unwanted. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Tripoli. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Charlie. How are you? Thanks for having me on. Sorry if there was any background noise.
Nope. You know, no background noise.
I'm a professional podcaster. You would think the support staff would understand that. But it's an honor to be on your show. I'm super happy for you. You're doing amazing things, Charlie. You deserve all the blessings the universe is giving to you. So thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thanks for coming on. I remember, like, I think one of the first times I was on your show, you were at like episode 300 or 350. And I remember thinking, 300 podcast episodes, that is impossible to do, right? We're about to hit 400 here at Macro Aggressions. I know you're aware, 750, close
we
to 800.
We just hit 731. Oh. Which is crazy because that means we're almost to 750, which means we're halfway through to doing our second 500 episodes, which is, and I've always thought, you know, we'll make it to 1,000. We'll see if the show is still going to keep going. But I think the show has a lot of legs and could go on forever. And all my, I have like 90 podcasts because I'm a crazy person, but all my brands are brands old people could talk about. Like you'll listen to an old guy talk. So, we'll see how long it goes. I enjoy the journey and I enjoy meeting people like you and everybody on the Union on the Unwanted and everybody like that. So thanks for having me, buddy. I'm super happy for everything that's going on with you.
Well, I'm excited for the stuff that all of us seem to be doing in the alternative media. We're starting to get these opportunities, or I should say we're starting to make these opportunities for ourselves and getting into some interesting avenues that I didn't ever really think would happen. You're going down the comic book avenue, which is cool. You know, I watched Eric July do this. I saw him, I think the first year I was at Anarchapulco, I saw him there. And he launched his comic book a couple years ago. I think he crowdfunded and raised like over $1 million to get that thing started. And it's booming, right? So now here you come. Can we talk a little bit about Chaos Twins? Because I like where you're going with this, man. I think that you're making these, you know, you're not leaving it up to just podcasting, not just the audio, but it's this is a visual format as well. And I love what you're doing. Can we talk a little bit about that?
I'd love that. I love that. And then I want to get into the opportunities that our community is creating, because I think it's been around for a while and people don't understand. But you know, I have twin daughters. I didn't think I was going to have kids, and I had kids and it was a real blessing. So, you know, I would have to like take them out, and sometimes you can't play outside. So I take them to indoor playgrounds, which are very big in LA. And every time we'd enter this one called Munchkins, I'd be like, the Chaos Twins are here. So as you watch, you're always hanging out with your kids. You end up watching whatever they want to watch on television, and you just start seeing there's a lot of woke stuff in the children's programming, and there's a lot of creepy vibrational people, particularly, I hate to say it, the men. They're just creepy. It's just creepy. So I was like, you know what? I bet you there's a lot of parents out there that would like to have some fun stuff for their kids to be able to read and to enjoy without having to worry about whether it has this cultural Marxism in it. And, you know, because sometimes like you, it's like, you never know, like, okay, you turn on one video on YouTube and that video's done. You never know what YouTube's going to suggest your kid next. And I watched some guy trying to teach kids magic. I'm not talking sleight of hand, but like doing spells and stuff. And I'm like, this is not appropriate for children, especially my children's age. So I was working with the Paranoid American and we were like, let's make a comic book. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And he worked really hard on it. Shout out to him. And we're like, let's do an Indiegogo. And our goal was $3,500. And we're the blessings are, we're almost at $35,000 to make this situation, this project happen. And the goal is, I'm not trying to make money off this right now. Like if down the line people loved it, that'd be great. But really it's about just creating a project, a family friendly project from somebody who's like a D joke comic for me. So it's going really well. And the more money we put into it, the more animations and episodes come. I'm putting all the money back into it.
Where can people support it?
Just go to chaostwins.com. Chaos Twins. I couldn't even, like, anytime that you can find a website address that is sane and normal at this juncture in the internet is such, I cannot believe Chaos Twins and the Chaos Twins was available.com. Got it. Really love it. So yeah, man, thanks for letting me promote it. It's about two little girls who move to a new neighborhood and they have superpowers that they discover that they have. And each house on the neighbor in, on the block is a different conspiracy. And now we're getting into like, now we're like thinking about where can we take this? And there's so many different avenues and we just want to teach kids kind of how the world works and in a fun way that their parents can enjoy it as well.
I mean, I know you've said like we're in a haunted house, like we live in a haunted house with the conspiracies. So it kind of makes sense that every house is a different conspiracy as well. I love that, man. That's fun.
Oh yeah, I mean, that is to me, like, you know, I've gone on this like real spiritual journey, you know, on my podcast. It started with Matt LaCroix and then this, who's coming from a scientific data point of view about the timeline of humanity. And then I had a Buddhist author named Von Galt. She came on my show and she was saying the same things, but from a spiritual point of view. So I started to like, I started going, oh man, there's something more going on here. So I've been on this real spiritual journey going on. And, you know, I got Christ in my life. I'm a Christian, God above all. But I do believe there's more to it than any one thing I've ever learned. And again, this whole idea is that I believe that there's some areas of wherever we live that are more haunted than others and that you can't really change those areas. And the key is for some reason you're born into that area for whatever reason it is. I don't know. You're born into that area and your job is to figure out a way to get you and your family out of that haunted area. Because if let's take a look at Gaza, right? And, you know, I mean, like that strip has been the center of violence and war crimes for thousands of years. Why is that? What is something about that area? My family used to be came from the village of Van. My grandfather was, which is now Turkey, but then was Armenia, or it was an Armenian, depending on the time, or it was an Armenian village in a Turkish country, and his whole family got genocided. And he decided, you know, my whole family got genocided, except for him, and he got out. He got out of that haunted area and went to a less haunted area called Detroit. And that's where he is now. So that's why, you know, that's why I'm kind of learning. Like you see it now with people, entertainers who come from like very poor neighborhoods. What do? They make enough money. The first thing they do is they get their family out of that neighborhood and they move them to a new neighborhood that's, I don't think, as haunted. So it's a spiritual war, brother. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it totally is. And there's no shame in like making it and getting out of a bad situation. That's the crabs in the crab bucket analogy when everyone wants to keep you there. You know, they want to keep you in this bad situation. If you have the skills or the ambition or the guts to get out. If it's a bad situation, leave. Go someplace better. There's no rules, right? You can get up and move to a different part of the country or move to a totally different region of this planet. And that's sort of your duty and obligation to do, especially for your family. My God, if you have kids and you're stuck in this situation that where it's just constant war and conflict, leave. Don't stick around. There's no heroes. I mean, you're a hero. Get your kids out.
I live in California, which is based off of Kali, which is a Hindu god, I think, of destruction or something like that. So like there's some weird energy in California, which is this beautiful, you know, this beautiful area where the weather's amazing, the scenery's beautiful, but there's some kind of weird energy here. And this also gets into something that I've learned, which is that you don't change the game. You have to learn to beat the game. And by beating the game, you show others how to beat the game. And then the game adapts to you. It does not, you don't change the game. The game doesn't say, oh, we're going to operate differently. No. there is a battle between you and the game constantly. And when you beat the game, you show others how to beat the game. If not people beat the game, the rules of the game change. You see that in comedy where it started out where like, you know, the whole thing was to get on the Tonight Show. If you got in a sitcom, you get in a movie and everyone did that. And if you couldn't do that, you were done. You were done. You had to go into writing. That was the game. And then Dane Cook comes along with MySpace. And Dane Cook changes the game. Now it becomes an internet thing. So now everybody's doing that. Suddenly, here comes Death Squad, right? Which was Joe Rogan, Brian Redband, Tom Segura, myself, Ari Shaffir, Duncan, Joey Diaz. This whole group of guys started doing comedy for their own purpose. They weren't doing it for the industry. So then everyone starts doing podcasts now. And then Andrew Schultz comes. And now Andrew Schultz going, oh, I'm going to do a podcast, but I'm also going to put out clips. So now that happens, and now people are putting out their specials on YouTube. The game just keeps adapting and changing. So when you brought up earlier about the opportunities that people like us in the truther community are getting, we've always created the opportunities. We are the reason why YouTube got to where YouTube was. Through all those conspiracy docs that people went there for, and then they filled in the cracks with the, you know, the puppy videos, the twerking videos, the prank videos, and now the kid shows, which is a big part of YouTube. But we like Jason Burmese, those are the guys that built YouTube into what it is now. So all the opportunities are coming are always created by people like us all the time.
Yeah. And we've had to, it was frustrating to when YouTube started kicking people off, demonetizing them first and then kicking them off. But I think in retrospect, from as a content creator, from our standpoint, it forced us to evolve and adapt. And it forced us to not be complacent and just sit around and wait for YouTube. Oh, I got my stuff on YouTube. That's all I need. Well, we had to explore the Rockfins and Odysseys and Bandot videos of the world because we didn't have a home. We were sort of forced off of our land, so to speak. And I think that it was, even though it was really frustrating, it cost a lot of people a lot of money. I think in retrospect, we're better for it because we've had to be resourceful. We've had to network. We've had to be paranoid. We've had to build wall off our gardens. You know, I was talking to Corbett about this a while ago, and he was like, you know, I have to do my own thing. I have to be independent of everything else. If all the external things go away, I need to have my own little castle with a wall around it. And I get that for sure. And that's forced us. We've had to think about things differently. You know, you got to get on Substack, or you got to get on Telegram, or you got to do whatever. So this censorship has been frustrating for sure, but I think that in retrospect, when we look back on it, we will appreciate that we had to go through that struggle because it made us better at what we do, right?
I completely agree. And I think it's the more diverse it is, the harder it is to clamp down on it, my personal opinion. And, you know, it's like every day, I'm not saying that Tinfoil Hat did it, but shows like yourself, my show,
you know, Tinfoil Hat did it.
Alex Jones, you know, all these guys, you see a new conspiracy podcast left and right. And I couldn't be happier. The more the merrier, because they can't quiet everybody down. They can try. I just don't think it's possible. And, you know, kind of what you were talking about, I'm going to be, in the new year, moving more towards, I will always be on Rockfin. I always have stuff on Patreon, but I'm going to move a lot more to samtripoli.com and loading almost everything there, doing live streams on there because I think it's very important that we, in a weird way, we get back to the old school where everybody had websites and all that stuff, and we don't allow them to silo us and put us into these algorithms where nobody could see us. So I think it's important to have a foot in the mainstream social medias, but also have your own little plot of land on the internet where they can't completely censor you. And that people can always go to if, let's say, you do get kicked off Twitter or you do get kicked off the Instagram. I mean, the numbers I used to get, Charlie, on Instagram, YouTube and Twitter. Like, they're insane. We're talking millions. Like, sometimes I go to myself, I go, maybe I'm just not entertaining. Maybe I'm just not. I'm just, these guys who are blowing up are just way more talented than me. I'll accept I'm not funny. But I know that at one point I was getting the big views. I got 3 million views on Twitter once. I got 5 million views on Instagram over a 30-day thing. Now I can't even get 200,000 views on Instagram in a 30-day period. And then YouTube, we used to get 200,000 views on our videos. Now both my shows on YouTube, whether it's Broken Sim or the one with Brian Callen, who is a humongous comic, I can't get more than 13,000 views. It gets capped every time.
It's a sign that they're terrified of us, of the information, of what we're doing. Because if they weren't, then let us talk, right? If we're just talking about Elvis eating ding dongs in a Safeway somewhere, like, let us talk, right? But the problem is that we aren't talking about nonsense. We're talking about really important things, and we're bringing on doctors, and we're bringing on scientists, and we're bringing on lawyers and people that are way smarter than us that know this stuff inside and out, and they're making a lot of sense, and that terrifies them. And so yes. I understand what the play is. I understand that they want to silence us, not because we're crazy lunatics spouting misinformation, but precisely the opposite of that, because we're measured, reasonable, rational people that have strong arguments that they just don't want to get into, right? I mean, you can't. What are you going to do? You're going to debate Dr. Peter McCullough on vaccines? Good luck to you. You know what I mean? That guy will destroy you. So if you can't win the argument, right, you just take your ball and go home. If you're YouTube, right? I mean, that's of course, that's what they were there for, right? They're there to allow you like this acceptable area of discussion, and anything outside of that just gets shadow banned, right?
It's super interesting because our model in podcasting somewhat goes against the normal model of podcasting, which is get a big guest and get their fans to listen to your podcast. My podcast in particular, I've had people on that barely have 200 followers on Twitter at the time. I think I had that when I had the Human Vibration on, which is like one of the people I discovered who became a big name in the truther community, but she had like no followers, and she was coming on talking about the JonBenet Ramsey case. And you know, it's like some of my people, they have only a couple hundred followers on this, or a couple hundred, meaning they're not the biggest names, yet they get giant, giant, giant listens on my show because it's topic driven more than guest driven. Obviously, having somebody like a Eddie Bravo or Alex Jones on is a blessing, right? And those are the kind of easy ones where you tee off on, but to have these people that a lot of people haven't heard of dropping incredible knowledge is really like, I just had Austin Picard on, and that guy dropped so much knowledge about Ruby Ridge. He just started his podcast. His episode on Tinfoil Hat was the first time he ever did a Zoom interview. So it's like crazy. Like our shows go against the norm and the normal operating way of operating. It's kind of interesting.
What does Callen think of you at this point? Does he think you're you guys have a good relationship, right? Have you?
I consider him one of my best friends. I love him to death. Yeah. He loves me too. And I'm going to tell you, he's coming to our side, but it's very funny because I'll tell him all this stuff, and then he'll battle with me and call me buzzwords. And then he'll meet with somebody who used to be an agent or used to do all, and then they'll tell him the exact same thing in a more literal literacy voice, and suddenly he'll believe it. But listen, if I could tell everybody anything about Brian Callen, he is a good guy at heart. And the truth is, he's not one of us. He's just meaning that you and I are kind of in the trenches, pushing out this information, like dealing with the things that happened in the shadows. And Brian Callen kind of got really screwed by a giant psyop that happened, the Me Too movement. And out of everybody that got canceled, if you actually study his accusations, it's all complete BS. So he's forced into these things. And for me, it really sucks. And now we've kind of seen him coming back. And I know today he's doing another new show he started called Hypothetical Danger. And it's going to be classic Brian Callen that everyone loves. So I love him. I know he drives some people crazy, but you know, just so everyone knows, we have been working on him and he is starting to come around.
Oh, I feel like everybody comes to this information when they're ready for it, right? I mean, there's no set timeline. Like you can have the conversation and make a pretty decent rational argument about a particular topic to somebody and it won't click. But then, like you said, maybe they talk to someone else or something, you know, something else. They need confirmation from somebody else beside you. You could just be spouting nonsense to them, but then they see it somewhere else. And it might be one small thing. And that's the thing. They go, well, I think you might be right about this. And it opens them up to the possibility that everything that they know is wrong. And that's one of the first books that I got by Lloyd Pye called Everything You Know Is Wrong. And you read that book and you go through it and you're like, damn, you know, like this is like we really are in to borrow Alex Jones term. We really are in an information war. Right. And so the information that Brian gets and Brian, it seems like he seems like a decent, nice, definitely a smart guy, of course.
Yeah.
But the information media diet that he has been consuming has made him think a certain way. And the information media diet that you and I have been consuming makes us feel totally different. And of course then, but being in this and reading about this stuff and writing about this, you start to get these names and events and places and organizations, and they're in your head. And they might not mean anything now, but then something in the news happens and you hear one of those names or one of those organizations and you go, I know that from somewhere. And so we have a little bit more context because we're into this stuff than somebody like Brian Callen might have. So if only he had, you know, if he read Behold a Pale Horse or something like that.
Oh, he has. And he thinks, at the time I had him read the book, he thought it was absolutely crazy hogwash. But now he is coming around to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just totally right. It's so crazy, Charlie. Like, I don't know when your first conspiracy was. I always say mine was Santa. And then after that was the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan being busted in a car together. That shattered my world thing. But I was raised by paranoid people. And, you know, that could be both good and bad. Not my parents. They were all great. But to be that paranoid can be good and bad. But my dad, at a very early age, and it stuck with me, he goes, believe nothing what you hear and half what you see. Said that for me at the start. He said that to me. And I applied that to everything. So I get in college, I'm studying, you know, I get a book, I get introduced to Bill Hicks through Tool. I'm studying Bill Hicks. I'm studying Noam Chomsky. I'm asking questions. Suddenly, I start to understand there's more going on to the world. So I've been doing this for a while. I don't know how long. How long has macroaggressions been going?
We started right around the pandemic. We didn't mean to, but it started March 7th of 2020, and my Octopus book came out in August of 2017. So I started writing that early 2016, and so I've been an active participant since about, you know, since early 2016.
So, you know, you've been in this for a little while. Tinfoil Hat is about to celebrate its 7th anniversary, December 13th of 2000. What was it? 2016? Yeah. 2016 was the first episode. Here, let me make sure. Yeah. Of 2016. Yeah. December 13th. So we've been doing it for a while. And I always tell people, like, the show's 7 years old. If I was wrong, it wouldn't be going this long. You know, there was a show out there. The person who on the show is a friend of mine. She is a very funny comic, but she bought into the whole Russiagate thing, and the podcast called Mulder She Wrote, which was the Mulder investigation and stuff like that. And obviously the wheels fell off that, and the podcast, I don't know if they had to change the name or whatever it was, but if we were wrong, we wouldn't have our shows going this long. But the biggest thing I want to get is that once you start understanding there's a playbook and you study their playbook, you start to get to this place where you just see the plays being ran, which was, a great example is October 7th in Israel, which had all the writings of 9/11 and the Vegas shooting. So you start to go and you have this initial reaction going, okay, this seems shady to me out the gate. It just seems, and you're like, you study, you go, okay, I'm going to let people know I think something's up. You put it out there and you hope and pray you're not wrong, but more than not, we're right. Our batting average is .950. So I came to this conclusion the other day that sometimes I wonder, Charlie, if we're wasting our time. Are we wasting our time by learning this stuff? Sometimes I feel like I have friends of mine who I love with all my heart. Sometimes I feel like I'm standing right next to them. I don't believe anything on the news and they don't believe any conspiracies. I'm like, are we standing right next to each other? And then I had this epiphany on a show that I recorded on Wednesday, and where it's going to come out on Tuesday, is that the reason that you want to know what they're doing is because they are energy vampires that feed off your anxiety, your depression, and your sadness. And everything that they do is a manifest event. So they're just trying to manifest. So the more you know of their BS that they're pulling, the less they're likely to be able to get you to manifest for them to do what they really want to do. And that is why it's important that you listen to shows like Macro Aggressions and the Union of the Unwanted, because you start to learn their playbook. You don't allow them to manifest. A great example of that is when they tried to get us in the war with Iran over the drone strike. Oh, they shot down our drone. You're like, okay, we've heard this before with weapons of mass destruction. We don't believe you. And guess what? We didn't have an official war with Iran at that moment. So yeah. I think that's our job.
And I think one of the nice things about what Tinfoil Hat has done over the years is that you have found a way to inject comedy into these really serious topics. And that's like conspiracy lubricant, right? It just sort of, before you stick it in, you have a little comedy and it eases everything a little bit more so that it's not so life or death. I mean, we're talking about heavy duty subjects, of course, but if you can do it in a way that makes people laugh, it reminds me of The Daily Show back when Jon Stewart was doing it,
the line between funny. Democrat and Republican was set in a good guy, bad guy kind of way.
Right, exactly. And he would have fun and he would explain a real event and talk about it, but he'd do it in a way that was funny and witty, and you would get both. You'd get a show, you'd laugh a little bit, but then you'd also go about your day and you'd know that there was something that had happened. Maybe it was an overseas incident, and he found a way to infuse humor in that. And you've been able to do that. Obviously, Rogan's done it too, but this idea of taking these topics that are supposedly off limits, right? That we don't talk about that, that's disrespectful, or it's anti-Semitic, oh, yeah, or it's racist, yeah, or anything. Oh, fuck off. Get rid of all that stuff.
Yes.
Let's have some fun. Let's laugh about it. Like racial jokes are funny because they're awesome. You know what I mean?
100%.
Truly tasteless jokes, like volume 11, they make those books because they're funny, and making fun of people for their skin color is hilarious as long as there's not like evil intent behind it.
Yes, what's your intention?
Like, and you also have to be able to, what the requirement is that you also have to be able to laugh at yourself too. I mean, you have to be able to laugh at white people eating mayonnaise sandwiches and getting called honky. Like, that's hilarious. So so I think that you brought conspiracy into the comedy world, and allowed people to laugh at the absurdity of it all, but still get a little bit of an education, right? Like
I love that.
You talk about serious things. You inform your guests. You inform your audience by bringing on guests that are really knowledgeable. I mean, you get big guests, man. You have huge guests on your show. Like,
well, I really appreciate that, and you've said that. I really appreciate the kindness of what you said. And one thing I want to say is that, you know, the big reason why comics, who are the most censored people, comics and YouTube creators, why are they so censored? Because they can create quality content without the banker's money. Like I don't even need a microphone to do stand up. I can just, I have a buddy, Orny Adams, who walks on stage, doesn't even use a mic, screams at the crowd and super crushes. He's like the funniest guy. Him and Tony Rock are the two funniest guys in LA. He doesn't even use a microphone. That's what it is. It's wow. Crazy to me. So, you know, and this whole thing about like, I just posted this video about a clip from stand up about there's no more white couples in commercials. Black people are crushing it, and you know, and they got black people doing stuff in commercials I've never seen them do in real life. You know, like there's a commercial right now where they got black people scuba diving, and I'm like,
yeah,
black people don't even take their socks off in porn. Now they're deep sea fishing, you know.
Right.
And somebody went, oh, racial jokes, and it really infuriated me because I have been forced to see race at gunpoint. And yeah. Like, you know, I know in the truth or community, they always mock this, our diversity is our strength. I really do believe that. I do believe our diversity is our strength. It's one of the great reasons to live in LA or New York is that you can experience all the cultures all in one place. And it's a really great thing. But when they weaponize it, so we all fight with each other, that's the problem. But they get mad at us. Get mad at a comedian for doing a racial joke is just absolutely ridiculous. And this is kind of a debate I just had with Dylan on my Conspiracy Social Club. It's like, you know, like everyone's complaining about anti-Semitism right now. And I go, well, you know, there's an old saying, it's like, watch out for giving people special treatment because they think equality is disrespectful. And it's not that I think that people there's more quote unquote Jew hating than ever. I just think for the first time ever, a certain demographic that was very protected is getting the same criticism that everybody else is getting. And they're allowed to now get criticized when in the past you couldn't. So what seems like disrespect is actually equality. It's kind of along the lines of like when you see women complain about, oh, when you women get older, they become invisible in society. I go, no, you don't. You just become like everybody else, which means you have to earn what you like. If you're backstage at a rap concert, well, now you got to know how to rap. You're not just getting invited because everybody wants to, you know, date you at that. It's like now you're just equal. You're not lesser than. You're just equal. You're no longer an instant celebrity. So that's what's going on with the whole, we got anti-Semitism. It's not on the rise. Do I condemn people saying this group needs to get murdered or that group needs to get murdered? And I say that for Jews and I say that for Palestinians. I also say that for white people that have been teed off forever on all these mainstream legacy corporate platforms, which not only allowed it, but actually glorified and amplified it. Like there's people with six-figure incomes in LA working on projects that their whole thing was just teeing off on white people on Twitter and the bots would retweet it like they said something important. So what I say right now is everybody's at the same place right now where they are all allowed to be criticized.
Yes. Thank God. They should. And you're better for it. You know, it toughens you up a little bit. It's been wild to watch. It feels like psychological manipulation though, too. Over, you know, like we've got it's like, oh, Ukraine's not working. Cue the Middle East, you know, and like here we go.
But like, even the Ukraine was like that kind of pops off when the COVID narrative is dying. Right now, it's a new one and a new one. And as much as you want to think Putin is fighting this and Putin is fighting that, it's just like it seems like a small club and you're not in it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what's next. What could possibly be next? I mean, are we going to have to stand with Taiwan? and put Taiwanese flags in our Twitter bio, or are we gonna?
It's crazy. I do think it's going to involve some sort of immigration thing. That'll be the next thing.
I want to talk to you about that since the immigration thing, because I just saw an article that was fascinating and terrifying all at the same time. It was Dick Durbin, who's congressional dickhead. I don't know what he does, but he was talking about.
Jeffrey Epstein's list? Isn't that the guy that did that as well?
I mean, Dick Durbin sounds like something you'd pay a Thai hooker for, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's the one who vetoed releasing the Epstein flight logs.
Maybe. Well, I'll tell you what his new thing is he wants to grant citizenship to illegal aliens for joining the military and fighting for this country. What a crazy slippery slope that is, right? We've always worried about United Nations blue helmets coming in here and not being, worried about shooting Americans. Well, what if your military, what if the American military, and it might not happen overnight, of course, maybe let's say 15 years from now, has been just and almost exclusively filled with people that were illegal immigrants that came over in exchange for citizenship. Sam, 71% of Americans are ineligible to join the armed forces because of obesity, stupidity, or criminality. Those are the numbers. 71%. So they've got
to. You mean their plan is working?
I mean, it might be.
I mean, they made us fat. They're making us dumb. And it's not that we're getting dumber, Charlie. It's just we're being saturated with useless knowledge, right? I mean, if you go back to, don't tell me Russian peasants from the 1500s were all Albert Einstein. They just had a much smaller amount of information given to them. And that information was math, writing, arithmetic, history. Well, now, because of these, we're just getting inundated with dumb stuff that doesn't mean anything. So most people can't name all 50 states. Okay, guess what? They know who's doing this because that's what they're getting just saturated with. It's done on purpose. And you know what really upsets me, Charlie? And I'm sorry I cut you off right there. But I what really upsets me is this thing that, this notion that Americans are fat because they're lazy. I don't think they're fat because they're lazy. They're fat because they're working more than ever and they have to eat shitty food because they don't have a lot of time to cook proper good food, and everything that they're buying, all the ingredients are the worst. This is all part of a ploy to make us lazy. What they really want is for us to be so dumb that we can't figure out how our government works. And they won't, that we can't follow that our Federal Reserve, ours, I mean that very loosely by ours, their Federal Reserve in America, is funding the entire international military industrial complex. And they're using our sons and daughters as stormtroopers. But now, because they've killed us with our minds and killed our bodies with bad food, they're not even going to use us anymore. They're just going to use these poor people from other countries who signed up to be fodder for the machine.
Yeah. It's a sick idea, but it made sense. I thought, oh, okay, now I get it. Now I understand. I always thought it was like, we're just going to have them go, we're going to grant them voting rights, and then they'll just vote Democrat. They'll vote blue because we're the ones that let them in. And yeah, of course, I'm sure that's part of it as well. But also, when they keep saying military age fighting men, and they keep saying that, and it's not just here, it's also in Europe too. We're in the same situation where we've got in Western Europe, there's just a lot of military age fighting men. It's like, okay, why this very specific demographic? Where are all the pregnant women? Where are all the old ladies that are supposed to be escaping economic hardship? Where's the babushkas, walking, 1,000 miles in order to get to safety? Instead, what I see is a bunch of guys that look like they're trying out for the, in Western Europe, they all look like they're trying out for the Lakers, right? It's North Africans, right? And then in the United States, It looks like everyone from Central and South America is coming up. So is this part of a destruction from the inside? Is it part of like softening? Could you imagine, Sam, being somebody that's like spent 4 years and $50,000 going through the proper channels for immigration, you, your family, you know, you're trying to immigrate here. You're like, I've got to do this. I've got an interview with INS and I've got to prove this. And we've got to show them. We've got all the documentation. And let the southern flank wide open and everyone just walks in and they're treated like gold. And you're treated like, well, you know, we're going to have you come back in 6 months and maybe we'll give you a green card if you're lucky.
It is interesting because, you know, this Dick Durbin thing could just be a head fake. Smokescreen, because I really do believe that we are in a Bolshevik revolution and that the power elites, the banking elites at the highest levels, and that's not code word for anything, okay? That's banking elites.
Right.
have been doing this to everywhere. This is how they do. They destabilize. So their goal right now, let me see, Charlie, I did this last night on I think he's been on your show before. Oh, let me look this up real quick. I think he was on your show before because he was on the Union of the Unwanted. It was a very big deal. But I did the Capitalist Conspiracy by Edward G. Griffin. That's where I break down old conspiracy videos and discuss them. And he broke down like this is all part of the playbook. This is all about destabilization. So that all the talk about nuclear war is about trying to bring in one world government, and all the crime in the street is trying to bring in martial law. This is what they always want. They fund communism and they fund capitalism to a point because they're really socialist at the highest level, and they just want corporate socialism. They want to get taken care of. They want the kids to get taken care of. Why we all pay. This is all being done on purpose. You cannot attack America straight on. You can't do it. There's too many guns here. But over time, you keep loading it up slowly through slipping through the borders, which is what they did to Russia during the Bolshevik War. The whole communist revolution was astroturfed by the international banking cabal out of like the city of London and the Bank of England. It was all astroturf, yep. Just like what's happening right now.
Yeah, if not financed directly by Ford, Henry Ford and the Rockefellers and in Carnegie and all these people. That was the problem with the Bolshevik Revolution. When you take over all the factories and you murder all of the upper management, problem is nobody knows how to run the factories. So they got to a point where they couldn't run the fact they'd seized the levers of production, but then they didn't know how to run them. And so they had to import in Americans and Germans that knew how to run the factories. And they said, well, step aside, we'll run these factories. You can't expect a bunch of farmers with a third grade education to come in here and be able to run this steel smelting operation that you've got going. Maybe they can work at the lower levels, but the people that are actually running and ordering and making sure the machines work, that was like skilled labor. And they hadn't thought that far ahead. So we've got capitalism, we've got capitalists financing communism as a way to make sure that there's no competition. And, you know, Berwick and I put out Controlled Demolition of the American Empire coming up on a little over 3 years ago. And we wrote that as sort of a cautionary tale of like where things could go. And it feels like a documentary at this point. Like it feels like the things that we were talking about, so many of them have already happened. And I wish like a real, when do we head for the exits? You know what I mean? Like we talked about like being in a bad place. We started this episode by talking about being in a bad place. You know, you might need to get yourself out of there. When is America the bad place that you need to get yourself out of? Is it blue helmets on the street? Like where's the line in the sand in which we look at each other and we go, it's time to get out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I don't know what the answer is. Like, unfortunately, everyone's always like, Sam, when are you gonna move out of LA? I would love to move out of LA. I just have certain things that are keeping here that I don't want to get into, but I would love to live out of LA. But I also think like, I think people think there's a certain area where the tentacles of control can't reach. And I think it's everywhere. I think they can reach everywhere. I think the key is that these people play by certain rules, and their rules are the occult manifestation. And if we educate people enough, not at gunpoint, not forcing them, but a lot, he's like, the old saying is like, don't worry about the sheep, wake up the sleeping lions. I say, don't even wake up the sleeping lions. Just put the information out there and let the people who want to wake up, wake up. Going back to what you were talking about with Brian Callen, you can't save everybody. You got to save yourself. And that's how we beat them. But again, by you don't change the game. You beat the game, and you're going to beat the game by teaching people how to wake themselves up. And that's how you do it. And I just really do believe, man, everybody thinks we're going to, China's going to bomb us. That's a new thing, that they're going to pull Pearl Harbor. China's economy is on the verge of collapse. They don't have enough people. They're struggling right now.
They have a demographic problem for sure.
Right?
Their one-child policy screwed them over.
So imagine if they go to war with America. They are done. They're done. It's over. Stick a fork. Like, this is how they do it. Everybody has to work with everybody, right? So Charlie, the crazy story is, I can't, the book's in my bedroom, but they brought up like this, the history of the Saudis, right? And how that empire came, the Saudi royal family came to power. And it was basically that the Saudi royal family, they were nomads, right? And then the international banking cabal discovers giant oil reserves. So they went to these farmer people and said, listen, we will set up the whole apparatus for you to extract your oil and be able to sell your oil if you agree to two things. And we also will tell you that you can make any price you want. That's up to you. We don't care. You can make up the price, whatever you want. You just have to agree to two things. You have to put your all the money you make off oil into our banks, and we'll bust you off your piece. And two, you have to invest in America. And this was diabolical. And they did it at a 50-year fix. 50-year fix investment. Investment. They had to keep their money in there for 50 years. That was the deal. Because these people, they didn't know contracts. They didn't know anything. They didn't play by those rules. So this is what happens, right? So they start putting their money in. Well, the international banking cabal, the IMF, starts using the money that's being deposited as the money that they're going to loan out the third world countries as this aid, with all these crazy stipulations within the contract that is meant so they could never pay it back ever. And what's ultimately meant to happen is that they default on the loans, and then the international monetary banks can take all their natural resources. And what happens is, right before they make these loans, they'll go in there, they'll overthrow the government, stick in a dictator, give them the loan, fully knowing that the dictator will keep all the money. So the country doesn't even get the money. Mm. So this happens. So they do these with all these loans, all these third world countries. Well, eventually the third world countries start to wake up going, these loans are garbage. We're never going to be able to pay them off. We're not paying off the loans. And they default. So here's what happens. The international banking cabal goes, uh-oh, to the Saudis, your money's all gone. We lent it out and they won't pay it back. The Saudis freak out. And guess what they do? Because their whole thing, you know how they invested in America? They bought farmland. They bought all this farmland. Now they're freaking out. They got no money, and they got their population they got to take care of. So they start selling off the farmland. Now it bottoms out at pennies on the dollar for this farmland, in which, bang, the government, all these corporations come in and buy up all that land. So whenever you see your gas prices go up, it's total BS. It's just the Saudis making up a reason. So you remember during like the Ukraine war or whatever it was, they're like, oh my God, the pipelines, we're going to raise gas by $2. The gas that you're pumping in your gas, they pulled that out of the ground years ago, either a year ago or 2 years ago. They're refining the gas they're pulling out right now. They're refining. So the gas you're pumping is old gas. It has nothing to do with that. Having, you know, saying that because something happened somewhere that we should pay it. That's like going to a restaurant, ordering food, and the restaurant's like, yeah, the chicken was overdone. We got to redo it. It's going to cost you another $5. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, this is part of what woke me up to this whole thing. It was John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I read it in 2007. And he talked about this, the IMF and the World Bank, and they would loan money to these third world countries and get them into these debt obligations on hydroelectric power plants and things like that. And then they would fall behind in payments because, of course, they were never really going, you know, they were never going to generate enough revenue to keep this charade up and pay off everything. They were going to fall behind. And when they did, then they would go back to them and say, well, you know, you owe us a lot of money, so maybe you can like privatize your fishing industry and sell it to our friends, or you vote our way in a UN resolution, or put a US military base in your country that you didn't want but you have to. And if you don't, Jaime Roldos or General Omar Trujillo, we blow up your plane. And both of those guys got whacked in plane explosions within 3 months of each other. And they were both Perkins clients. And so this, and he told them, this is what he said. If I can't get the deal done with you, I need you to understand they will send in the jackals. That's what he said. And they said, the guy said, we know, we understand what the deal is. And, you know, within months they were blowing up. So this is the way it's always been done. And I had to learn that in 2007 to understand what was going on in the Vegas real estate market of 2007. I had to make the connection that we were doing that on a smaller scale, loaning money to mortgage companies, loaning money to people to buy houses that they were never going to be able to afford, default on it when that adjustable rate adjusts up, you know, a year or two from now, boom, they fall behind. And then who comes in, grabs it? The banks. They take back tangible assets. They loan fake money and take back tangible houses. What a scam.
Babylonian money magic, bro. It is usury. It's just what Jesus said. It's a complete and utter destruction of everything. It's usury. It's all BS. It's totally made up. And it's just ridiculous. And it's like, it's sad, dude. It's sad. Like the how ignorant people are to the Federal Reserve. If I hear another person go, oh, if I have to pay, I can't believe my tax money is going to Ukraine. Your tax money isn't going to Ukraine. Your tax money is going to pay off the interest on the money that isn't even going to Ukraine. It's going to Raytheon, Boeing, and all those other corporations. And then a small chunk of that is going to the Ukraine, and that money is going to basically all these corrupt politicians who are just jacking money and buying $70 million yachts and stuff like that. So it's just like, they don't want you to know any of this.
Yeah. That's what John Perkins was talking about. He was saying that with the IMF and World Bank loans that they'd have for like a country like Ecuador, they never even actually made it to Ecuador. The money went to his company, which is a company called Maine, which was like Halliburton, right? Multinational engineering firm. So they would say, well, we've got this money for you. Oh, give us the money. Well, it doesn't really go to you. It goes from the World Bank to Maine. And then we use that money to build the hydroelectric power plant for you. So you're on the hook for it because it's going to be your plant. But the money isn't really...
You know, 100%. It is all... Just a money laundering scheme. And like the amount of money, the billions of dollars that we are in debt, right? Trillions. I mean, like, there's not a lot of options to pay that back. I don't want to say some of them because that could get us in trouble, but it's like we're living in interesting times with that.
Yeah. If you owed somebody $33 trillion, why wouldn't you just whack them? You know what I mean? Like, we see loan sharks that do that for substantially less money. It's never under, you know, well, I guess I do understand, but I just thought that, well, if you owe the Fed this much, I just tell them you're not going to pay them, right? But I guess the Fed sort of runs this game. It's not the other way around. Not that the United States runs the Fed, but the Fed runs the United States.
100%.
That's the one thing I had to learn. That's the one thing I had to get my head around was that this
Federal Reserve's not federal.
Right. That the hierarchy that I thought was like, oh, well, the government is above the banks and everything. It's like, no. The banks are above the government. This is all like
banks
show.
Are above everything. And then above them are Babylonian banking families that go all the way back to Babylon.
I know.
Like, and then you get into like, that's where the spiritual war comes into. Is this involving Anunnakis and all that stuff? And these banker families from way back in the day, like the people who killed Julius Caesar are the same people who killed JFK. It's the same group, not the exact same people, but the same group and their heritage and their lineage, you know? Yeah.
Sam, you're the best. What do you have planned for 2024?
Charlie, I'm sorry we could go longer. I feel awful.
No, when are you going to come to Denver to do comedy? I've never come out here.
It's so I have the weirdest career, bro. I just have a weird career. It's just weird, and I've been wanting to play that comedy work so badly. Yeah. I haven't been able to get in there. I think I've seen Tom Papa
there twice.
I love Tom Papa. He's great. So I'm working on it, dude. I have like a weed dispensary wants me to come out, but I'm sober. I always get told I bring coke energy to a pop party. So I don't really want to do a weed show. Nothing against my weed fans or people who smoke weed, teach their own, but I would like to do comedy work. So I'm working on it. I would like to try. We'll see, dude. You know, daddy's very vocal. And some of the things daddy's vocal about upset the PA agents. So nobody really wants to handle me right now. So we'll see what happens, dude.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping for a big 2024 for all of us, really. I know it's going to get
I think it's going to be great, buddy. I really do. And I think you got a great future. I can't believe you're detoxing. You're already skinny as hell, dude. I mean, like, you're in such great shape, buddy. What are we talking about?
I'm trying to live forever without drinking baby's blood. You know what I mean?
I respect that, bro. My goal is by the end of December to try to be in the 180s, even if it's 189, because at my fattest, I was over 225. So my goal is to get down in the 180s. I'd love to be 185, but if I can just get the 189, I'll celebrate. But that's my goal. I'm doing jujitsu. I'm doing Krav Maga. I just started hot yoga yesterday. Love that. That was great. So I'm working on it, dude. Daddy's sober, so I don't really have anything else to do besides work out and not try to destroy my body.
Well, that's a good place to start. You're the best. Where can people find you? Where can they support you? Tell us.
Sam Tripoli everywhere. Sam Tripoli on Instagram, Sam Tripoli on Twitter, and samtripoli.com is everything you need, Sam Tripoli.
That's Sam Tripoli, everybody. You can go support him over at his websites. Go listen to Tinfoil Hat, for God's sake.
Check out Broken Sim, too.
And
YouTube.com, Sam Tripoli, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Broken Sim's a lot of fun. I like Johnny.
You guys do a good show together.
You have a good chemistry. And if you like this show, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. The website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you again soon.